Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day. And welcome, listeners, to episode 63 of God Beyond the Bible, the podcast made by seekers and for seekers. We hope each and all have remained safe during this epic period of national and world history. Our thoughts, prayers, and sincerest concern is with those who have been so adversely affected by this global pandemic. Definitely. Most especially if you've been one of those who have lost someone to the COVID-19 virus. We may only imagine what it's been like for those who have or have had a loved one hospitalized, who have been or have had a loved one hospitalized and isolated from their other loved ones.
Yeah. All right. For our shout outs this week, I've got KB and somebody that we don't shout out to a lot, but DJ. He listens all the time. And yeah. I kind of forget to those core listeners that we have
take,
that listen
to kind of take for granted. Don't want to take anyone for granted.
Yeah.
Okay, our quote of the week is from Marcus Aurelius. He was a philosopher and a Roman emperor. But he said, "You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this and you will find strength."
Okay. I like that.
Is it me now? Yeah, I'm lost already. You can tell how this is going to go. Last episode, we challenged ourselves to consider how we view God as to where He is in relationship to humanity. Is He, in our most primitive past, beckoning us to abandon our human advancements in medicine and technology? Or is He in our future, beckoning us towards a better human existence, even aiding us in our advancements towards reducing human suffering? In short, do we perceive the Almighty as a God of the past or the God of the future?
Yep. And we've decided to dedicate this episode to a topic that is on all of our minds, but not really so much to the topic of the COVID virus itself, but how all of our lives may be forever altered when we finally do emerge from this world crisis.
Yeah, I think there's already plenty of opinions out there about what this is about.
Definitely. And of course, we know that this will all be purely speculative, and we don't claim to possess the gift of prophecy, but we're pretty sure that some aspects of life as we knew it before all of this are going to be forever changed.
Yes, and we hope to discuss three main areas of impact that aren't getting a lot of airtime. And to use an old radio phrase, it's just not getting airtime. Yeah. And these three areas are, number one, the psychological impact, number two, the spiritual impact, and number three, the impact on the organized church.
Okay, so we're going to use the remainder of segment one to discuss how we think folks may be psychologically impacted by this event, especially for those of us who may have already had issues and struggles in this area. Most of us who struggle with things like anxiety and depression anyway, you know, we can find our mental and emotional issues compounded or at least amplified during this crisis. And what do you think some of the contributing factors might be?
I don't
be?
Know. I wanted to use exacerbated there, but I don't know how to spell it. I never could get it, spell it close enough to get the spelling on it. But anyway, so what might be some of the contributing factors?
Well, you know, guys, a big one for me has been an interruption in routine. You know, we found that those of us who, to varying degrees, live with symptoms of things like anxiety and depression, just to name a couple, aren't comfortable with change, especially in our daily life routine. And it is hard for me when my routine is broken. Everything.
And I think I mentioned this last week. I welcome change a lot of times.
I do on my terms.
I'm not afraid of, but I'm not afraid of change. Yeah. Well, we may feel vulnerable. Is that one you think? Do you think the loss of control of our normal activities, compounded by things like economic concerns and other uncertainties, have affected all of us as humanity to some degree?
As my sister just said, I like change on my terms.
And you know, I'm going to be honest, because I've been honest from the beginning. Anxiety is something I've always had. One of my triggers with my anxiety is health issues. And so to have this be something that, you know, you have to worry about going out. I finally had to just shut off the news, shut off the social media for a while, because I found myself constantly just almost refreshing the page to see what was going on.
Now what? Now what's going on? Exactly. What's today's update?
Yeah. How about the numbers? Looking at the numbers, you know, people doing that all the time. I think it's you, Tabitha.
C. Okay. What about our relationships? Someone made the prediction that the divorce rate and breakup of relationships will skyrocket following this period of isolation with those close to us. What do you think?
I think probably yes. I mean, I'm serious. I think probably yes. I know I kind of stay up with what's going on locally in our law enforcement and stuff. Yeah. And I'm hearing a lot more of those domestic type situations.
And just, I look at situations where we're kind of a little bit different than a lot of people on the compound. We're pretty much with our spouses.
All
the time.
But I look at couples that where one spouse usually works away for a week or several weeks at a time, and now everyone's home and locked in the house together, and it has to be hard when your routine's messed up that badly.
Well, and I was reading something the other day, and I don't remember the exact website. It was like ABC News or something, but they talked about how the search engines have seen a rise in the I want a divorce or how to get a divorce.
How do I file? What are my steps for divorce? Right.
Well, and as we know personally, there's this unspoken stigma that seems to go along with mental, emotional, and psychological issues that, in our opinion, causes many, if not most, folks who encounter symptoms to go untreated. Mm-hmm. And what might you say to a person that's struggling with these issues to encourage them to seek professional help?
Well, you know, we like I wrote down here, you know, maybe if they just knew they're not alone.
Yeah.
You know, the stigma is part of that is that you're different and you're very different and something's wrong. Something's wrong with you, but you know. And the second would be for me, there's no shame in seeking help.
No, there's not. And there really is help out there. Sure. Don't.
And we'll be talking about that again and again. And we say that over and over. And we're not doing that as a disclaimer.
Well, I will tell anybody out there, I'm medicated for my anxiety and depression. And it is one of the best things I ever did was sitting down with my doctor and going, I need help with this because I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, and sometimes tequila is not the answer.
Yes.
Self-medication. You said it's you were true. Medicated. You're not Okay.
Well, do you guys think that the Christian community, that is the church, has sufficiently addressed these issues?
No.
Or are we still just offering that age-old prescription of, well, you just need to turn this over to God.
Yeah.
Give it to God.
Read your Bible and pray.
Pray harder. Right?
I thought my microphone might have been static.
You know, and it makes you feel very, you know, you're not only hurting physically and mentally, but then you start hurting spiritually because you're like, okay, well, why is my faith in God not helping me through this? Why, you know.
I just can't do anything, right?
Exactly.
So what might we as the believing community do to better address these issues and begin to remove the stigma that seems to be associated with mental and emotional illness?
I apologize, but I didn't mean to smack in that microphone. I was trying to take a breath. But anyway, well, what can we do? What can the believing community do? We can talk about it. Talk about it openly.
That's right.
Oh, you may hear a message on depression or something occasionally from the pulpit or something like that, you know, but it's just kind of a passing. And then it usually ends up, you know, pray about this and turn it over. And I understand those are our standard go-to answers and things. But I think we just need to talk about it. I think there needs to be real programs in the church. If you're going to have a program, population of people would you reach than those that are suffering emotionally and mentally?
Oh, very true.
But I mean, and we're big on the drug addiction thing. I'm not knocking that. I've been big in that myself and the rehabilitation and stuff. But we go a lot of different ways. But yeah, it all has its
need.
Well,
and in some ways, if we addressed the mental health first, I wonder how many that would keep from ever turning to drugs. I mean, yeah, I'm not saying in every situation.
Well, yeah, right. Well, as our listeners know, we're not squeamish about venturing into the taboo when it comes to topics concerning the modern organized church. So let's go, or even the Bible for that matter. So let's go ahead and address the elephant in the room. And in your opinion, do you think that some of the approaches demonstrated by some of the church community may actually exacerbate the struggles of some folks who with these mental and emotional issues? I mean, things like, you know, we hear things like, if you had your spiritual house in order, these things would all go away, or just the premise of some preaching and teaching that we at our best are sinful and dirty and never able to get it right with God. That's one of the things I'm struggling with right now, is this whole deal from the Christian community that you're always hearing how nasty and dirty and lowly and unworthy and everything. And then I want to ask, well, then why did God give Jesus?
God can't look at you unless he looks at you through Jesus. That's something
Yeah, that we as his creation, we're just so nasty to him. He just despises us so deeply. And I mean, we're hearing that. You may not hear it in those words, but you know, your best is filthy rags. You know, and we hear all of that talk.
Then why did he go to all of this trouble to have us still here? He could have wiped us off the face of the earth years ago.
I'm moving away from that idea that God is all... almost said it bad. He's all hacked off and angry. That he's all hacked off and just angry all the time. And we're just, you know, he knows we can never do it. And he's trying to get us to know we can never do anything right. And so why? But then you start thinking, is that the motivation? Is that how you get?
Well, what does that do to your mental health?
Yeah, right. That's what we're talking about here. Yeah. I mean, exactly. And you're going, most people, they'll go to a church service. They're going to seek. They're looking for something spiritually. And then that's what they get. Well, you know, it's because you're just stinking rotten. Yeah. And there's no hope. Even if you're a believer, you're just.
I think I feel a future episode growing up there.
Maybe so. Who's got seven? Tracy? Tabby?
Okay. So certainly, as you know, we encourage anyone listening to this podcast to seek professional help with any and all mental and emotional symptoms and issues. There is no shame.
No shame.
And speaking personally, these issues are deeply rooted and often entwined with medical issues that usually do not correct themselves, but they do often tend to get worse in the absence of professional attention.
And yeah, folks, there are many people that end up in bad places because they never get any help for this stuff. I mean, I'm just talking, generally speaking, from my experience, it doesn't get better.
Right. And I want to put this out there, too, because I know some people feel really uncomfortable with the idea of, like, going to a therapist or things like that. But get online, do a little bit of research. There are strictly online therapists that you can talk to now, and you can handle it in the privacy of your home.
And probably would have to right now anyway.
Yeah. There are options out there that can still make you feel comfortable, can get you the help you need. So with that, let's go ahead and close out this segment with this question. Why is it that even as believers, we do not hesitate to seek professional attention when we have physical symptoms and illnesses, but we are so hesitant to do so with our emotional and mental symptoms and issues, when the latter can be just as devastating to our quality of life as the former?
Sure can. So allow us to pause and return with part two of episode 63 of God Beyond the Bible.
Okay, welcome back, seekers, to part two of episode 63 of God Beyond the Bible. Our topic today is, what might our world look like post-COVID-19 pandemic, and what areas of life may be permanently altered as a result?
And in segment one, we sort of discussed the topic that's really dear and important to us here at God Beyond the Bible, and that's the psychological, mental, and emotional effect that this crisis can have on us personally and as humanity as a whole. Mm-hmm.
And in this segment, segment two, we'd like to discuss the spiritual effect this may have on us personally and even collectively. I mean, as society. Namely, how the way we perceive God and his role in all of this.
As expected, it didn't take too long for many to jump on the old bandwagon of gloom and doom.
Oh, I'm sick of that. Yeah.
As we witness in every other major world event and natural disaster, there are a large number of those in the believing community who are quick to conclude that this is all God's doing And he's doing it just to show how upset he is with mankind. As with every other major event, we are bombarded with those assuring us that they are speaking for God and that the event in question is directly connected with our sin and the Almighty's displeasure.
So another message from the theological community, as always, is that this is the beginning of the end.
Oh no.
The apocalypse, as it is dubbed. And that this is the beginning of the release of the four horsemen in the book of Revelation.
Well, and I hope I haven't toned down too many pages there. I got mixed up and got back on another page. But and by the way, I want to tell you guys, if you heard some static in my microphone, when we moved the studio back out into the bigger studio, somehow I ended up with Tabitha's microphone that's got that static in it that sometimes if you touch it wrong.
Yeah, I got the good microphone.
Yeah, I lost that. Okay.
I don't know. Okay. I got a pipe cleaner holding mine together.
Yeah, but back to what we were talking about a while ago, our last thought. You know, this is the end. This is the apocalypse. This is the beginning of the four horsemen. And now, all of this is connected to our last episode and is a common reaction among those who perceive God as being somewhere in the past, calling on us as humanity to repent, return to some former time. We might dub this as the back to Mayberry syndrome. I think I said that last week. And anyone even remotely familiar with the ever popular Andy Griffith show knows what this means. Those of us who love this show are attracted to it because of the simplicity, kindness, and moral attributes of the sitcom. Now, it's hard for us to imagine that the initial popularity of the show was in no small part due to the conflict and struggles inflicted on society in the 60s. That's that stove doing that.
You know, we tend to forget that when this simple, homespun, humorous TV sitcom was aired, it was in the midst of another stressful and challenging event that we know as the Vietnam conflict. And this gave us all a virtual escape. Not us all. I wasn't alive.
No, it gave us a virtual escape.
But it gave us a virtual escape from the endless news feeds of how many families were affected by the daily loss of American lives.
And the problem with the Mayberry syndrome is that no place or time on earth has ever been that peaceful and that simple. Not even the beginning of the Adamic race, where it's recorded that with the slaying of Abel by his brother Cain, 1/4 of the race was murdered and 1/4 were murderers.
I don't think times are that bad right now, do you?
No.
I don't think we got a 25% murder. You got a 25% chance of being murdered if you go out on the street?
Ooh.
Okay. So it is in times like these that we must rethink, reexamine, and possibly reposition our perspective on God. This whole God is against us mentality is, in our opinion, counterproductive.
Yes.
And even contrary to the mission, hope, and message of Christ. Simply put, did Christ die for all sin? Did he die for all sin? And did he, by his own sacrifice, break down the separating barrier of sin, satisfying that penalty of sin?
If we understand Christ's mission as one of salvation, redemption, and making us right with God, then why are so many still telling us that events such as this occur because God is still angry? Let's consider this. If Jesus went to the cross to settle the sin issue and reconcile mankind to God, then what possible explanation can those gloom and doom people give us for God still being angry?
I don't know, and I've never thought to really ask that from those people who are constantly on
God's mad, he's hacked off.
And you know, another point,
I've got a feeling that if God gets hacked off, we'll know it.
Yeah, you're right. That is for sure. You know, another point that we might make is that in our local community, as far as we know right now, the majority of the people who have been exposed, sickened, and even died were all connected to a local church organization.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And what are we going to make of that? If this whole thing is God's doing, and we might add that we know these people and they're good, honest, practicing believers. The point is, for those claiming to speak for God who are saying that this is a result of God's displeasure over sin, how do you explain that?
I think you're going to probably get the answer, and it's going to be in the same way that you always get. It's the church's fault.
Mm-hmm.
We're in this shape. You know, I'm so sick of hearing that. It's the believer. If the Christian would stand up and do what they need to do that they know is right, then God would be happy. Well, isn't that just such a terrible thing to do is to just, you know, dump on the people that are trying to do good and do right and trying to be good people. And we'll just, let's just keep dumping on them. I've got you here in my voice, sound of my voice. I'm just going to dump on you.
Right.
Is it me?
It is you.
Okay. We'll close this controversial segment with this statement. Those who are truly seeking will see the Almighty in all of this, but it will be on the role of a loving Father beckoning us into a better future, not the author of all this suffering and confusion.
Welcome back to part 3 of episode 63 of God Beyond the Bible. Today we are discussing the way the present world crisis has affected us and how it may permanently change some aspects of life as we once knew it. In part 1, we talked about the psychological effect, and in part 2, we talked about the spiritual, and now in part 3, we're going to talk about the possible long-term effect on the modern organized church.
And if you've listened to our podcast in the past, you'll remember that we here at God Beyond the Bible do not have a cough button.
Yeah, you got that right.
That we here at God Beyond the Bible have been predicting that the way modern organized church has done business for the past 50 or so years will either change to meet the needs and the challenges of our modern world, or it's going to fade into oblivion. Mm-hmm. Now, let us be clear. The true church, that in our opinion is the universal community of believers, that will never disappear.
No.
But the organization itself has been on a path of decline for decades, and it has sharply accelerated in the past two decades of the 21st century. And we encourage you to revisit episode 10, which is titled The Decline of the Modern Church. And I think it's episode 11 is Decline of the Modern Church Part 2. And both of those
go into it
a little more.
Now, we've been saying for a long time that the organized local church, as we have known it, will likely be succeeded by the online digital interaction of believers and a few sparsely located brick-and-mortar megachurches, somewhat the way the rural education system has gone today.
In our local area in the past couple months, all of the local brick-and-mortar organizations have closed their doors, and most have opted for a digital substitute such as Facebook, YouTube, or whatever. Is it possible that this is a fast track towards the inevitable? In other words, has the recent crisis served the advancement of the move towards the virtual church?
My personal opinion is that it has.
Well, and I've talked to several people, you know, out on the route who have been attending their churches, virtual things, and they're really hoping that they continue it. Well, honestly, because especially some of the older people that I've talked to have actually found that they enjoy, when they're into so much pain that they probably couldn't make it to a service, they can still sit at home and they can watch it at their leisure. Right. Or folks that have young kids, they can not have to wake the kids up or wait till the kids wake up.
And let's just be honest. Let's just go ahead and cut to the chase. It's a convenience thing.
It is.
You know, it's a convenience thing. We've already got enough things scheduled in our lives that we have to be here at a certain time for a certain thing and be ready for and do all the prep work. Worship should not be one of those.
No.
It should not be one of those things. I don't know where we are or who it is.
Somebody just pick up with number 3.
Okay. Well, we've been saying for a long time that, well, I just read that, didn't I?
Well, then Tabby read
number 5.
We're just talking about that it is going to come down to digital interaction of believers.
Okay. Well, look at that. Trayson doesn't know where she is.
Well, now, did we do 4?
Yeah, I just asked the question.
She did.
Okay.
And like I said, guys, we do these raw, so
Hey. I try to train these girls up where they're doing things right. You can't control them. You don't never know where their mind is. Trayson's medicated for
it's medication.
Yeah.
And again, as we said in the first part of this episode, this is all speculative. But in your opinion, are some folks who have been sitting around in their PJs drinking coffee and attending the virtual service at their own leisure finding themselves embracing this lack of demanding structure in their spiritual pursuit?
Yeah.
Well, I just can't see how it's not appealing.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. We went to we went, our church, the church that my kids go to, they had a drive-in service, mm-hmm. you know, where nobody got out of their vehicles. But it was stressful to have to think about, okay, what am I going to wear even just to go there?
Well, you could just wear something on top.
And I guess I could have.
The news anchor style.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Oh, me.
Now who is it?
You on six.
Okay. What about the freedom to listen on a variety of topics, or listen in on a variety of topics and speakers other than just one speaker week after week? Will this lead to less isolation of various groups and congregations and possibly lead to a more universal believing community? Now, allow us to be the first to dub these curious folks as virtual church hoppers, since church hopper in times past is a label given to seekers who engaged in visiting multiple congregations of various denominations. And we all know somebody's been criticized. Well, he's just a church hopper.
And I'm going to be honest, you know, with the virtual church hopping and stuff, Steve and I have done some of that, and it doesn't limit us to Sundays either. We might go, oh, hey, did you see that so-and-so church posted something? Let's go watch there.
That's the whole point of it. Yeah. Is I've listened to a couple. I've listened to a friend of mine that I'd never heard speak before, and I thought he did a good job. When you get up here, Craig, to about number 63 or 64, paid you a compliment there. And I thought, you know, that's kind of neat. You can actually, just think about it. People who go to one church are limited at least 50 out of the 52 weeks. They're going to hear the same guy.
Oh, yeah.
The one guy is going to do, well, let's be honest.
I guess I shouldn't say it like that, well, since he was my pastor.
Well, people say, and think about this, people say as far as the virtual church is concerned, well, then people will just be a spectator. People are just spectators now.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's become one monkey mm-hmm. in the circus as far as that
right.
service part of it goes. Okay, I think Tabitha's seven.
Okay, again, addressing the elephant in the room.
We can't even see the elephant.
I know. How is the modern organized church being affected financially right now? And how will a shift towards virtual attendance affect the offering plate?
Well, I've got to ask you, if you went to the drive-in church, did they have an offering plate?
Yeah, it was on a step stool up at the front of where the speaker was
at. Okay. I've seen other churches that are offering you text this number or you email them your card information. Well, I was going
to say, and they also, because they live stream the service also, so they have a website you can go to. I've seen a lot of our smaller churches pop up with these options now.
Yes.
That didn't offer that before. So.
And of course, we're going to talk about that in the next episode, which is going to be more about the virtual, mm-hmm. where we're going. So I'm going to take number eight, yes. Tracy, and I'm going to leave you with the conclusion. Then jump
I
in
can
ahead
do
of
it.
You there. Okay, I've been speaking to folks personally who were, up until this present event, been regular members and attendants to the organized church, along with some pastors. And I've been asking them how they think this whole event will affect the attendance and participation when they are able to open the doors again. And some did, by the way, here in Arkansas yesterday, which, okay. The answers have been varied. Some are cautiously optimistic. Some are very realistic. When I asked the folks who regularly attend how they like the virtual church, for the overwhelming most part, they are honest and open, saying they love the flexibility of being able to listen at their own convenience. Many will say they miss the personal interaction, but have successfully remained in touch and connected with their group. The answers from the few pastors I've questioned are a little more reserved and varied. Some predicting a sharp decline, some predicting a sharp increase, some saying they think those core regulars will faithfully return. One thing I've discovered is that all of the pastors and leaders who have embraced the virtual technology have enjoyed an increase in the number of people their message is reaching. One of my pastor friends said his normal attendance on Sunday would be about 20. And many of his virtual messages have been listened to by as much as 10 times that mm-hmm. number. So I'd like to hear Tabitha and Tracy's comments on this before we close.
I mean, I'm really not sure. I love the idea of it, but I kind of believe that there are going to be those who are going to dig their feet in the ground and know we have to go, we have to assemble in some way. I completely embrace the idea of a virtual church. And then if you wanted to fellowship with them, you could
do something, have a picnic at the park.
You could do something where you really truly got to fellowship. Yeah.
Well, I follow a Universal Unitarian Facebook page, And that's what they've chosen to do with some of their churches are not going to reopen as far as the physical building.
Right.
They're going to continue to have their sermons that are broadcasted out. Mm-hmm. And then they will be having what they call Dinner for Nine, which is where they choose nine people to go on a picnic together or meet at someone's house. Oh. And you just kind of get your name thrown in the hat.
That's because of the little COVID thing, I guess, too.
It is.
Right now, the dinner for nine.
It'll gets to visit and have their fellowship.
Because I know here in Arkansas, we're not supposed to be in groups.
Of over 10, yeah. And it's or, the same
or
idea.
Or 50 at a gathering.
50 outdoor. Or,
I don't know.
Yeah. So everybody can go out and they can still, you can still get that fellowship that you need and that sense of community.
That's pretty neat, yeah.
So are we ready to conclude?
Yeah, I guess we are.
The reality is our world is always changing. But in times such as this, we're forced to make radical adjustments to life. We hope that if you are stressed and struggling with adjusting to these drastic changes, that you will not hesitate to seek help. There are lots of folks with incredible training and skills to help you live a better quality of life. We hope the time has arrived where folks will turn to them as quickly as they do to medical professionals with their physical needs. As far as how we perceive all of this and take it all in spiritually, it's going to depend on our open-mindedness and willingness to embrace the Almighty as the God of the future as opposed to the God of the past. And pertaining to the brick-and-mortar church, it probably isn't a death blow. But some, if not many, may find their congregations have embraced this new norm of virtual attendance and participation, and opting for this method over actually congregating in a building. Only time will tell. We would love to hear from you on this topic. You probably have some great thoughts of your own on the matter.
And we'd love to hear them. And regardless, as always, may God's grace, peace, and love be in, on, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.